Welcome to Freedom Radio. I am your host, Tim Sumner, United States Army retired and the co-founder of 9/11 Families for a Safe and Strong America. As I told you last week, another of America's brave warriors is being maliciously prosecuted by our military for a split-second decision he made to defend his fellow soldiers and his own life from an imminent threat. On July 21st, 2011, during his fourth combat tour, Sergeant Taylor's combat engineer platoon was ambushed about 40 miles south of Kabul, Afghanistan, by an IED being set off beneath one of their vehicles. And when this happened, it injured five of Sergeant Taylor's soldiers, including a soldier by the name of Specialist Wayne Wedgeworth. And right after that, Sergeant Taylor dismounted his vehicle with three of his fellow soldiers and, at the direction of the platoon leader, crossed a field. And the reason why he crossed this field is they were taking fire from both a hillside and also from two white cars that was on an adjoining road. And right after that, they started taking fire from those white cars. A black car pulled up and just passed them and came to a stop. Sergeant Taylor got out. Right after the firing from the enemy ceased, the two white cars sped away. Sergeant Taylor crossed this field with three soldiers at the direction of the platoon leader to check out the black car. Now, the platoon had poured fire into these three cars. But the two white cars sped away. The black car is sitting there. Sergeant Taylor, as the platoon sergeant, led three soldiers across this field. It didn't seem to be a threat, but they cautiously went over across the field, and as they got close, they noticed a detonation cord leading up to, and they did not know at the time, but past, but leading up to what looked like directly toward the black car. These detonation-type cords are often used to set off these IEDs, and they just had one set off underneath one of their vehicles. So now they're closing in on this vehicle, three soldiers and an interpreter, okay, and as they get close, a shrouded figure steps from the car and moves to the back of the vehicle. And according to all four soldiers, did not raise their hands, did not say don't shoot, did not say anything, moved to the back of the vehicle. So what was Sergeant Taylor supposed to do? He sees what he believes is an imminent threat, detonation cord going, looks like toward that vehicle, person is moving to the back of the vehicle. They have five soldiers already trooped. They're still in the middle of this ambush. This is just a few minutes later after the ambush was initiated. And he believed a threat was about to take place, that he could be killed or his fellow soldiers could be killed, the three troops with him and an interpreter. He fired, and a fellow soldier fired, killing that what turned out to be an innocent civilian. And for that, he is being prosecuted by the United States military for negligent homicide and dereliction of duty. Joining us now is James Culp. This is Sergeant First Class Taylor's defense lawyer. He is a very excellent lawyer. He is very experienced at defending those that defend us. He specializes in this type of law, advising and defending our soldiers, our troops around the world against prosecutions by our government. And most notably, he successfully defended our friend, Lance Corporal Justin Sherratt, in what is the so-called Haditha massacre case. He joins us now from Bamberg, Germany, and he's on the line right now. Mr. Culp, please, thank you very much for joining us here on Freedom Radio.
That's my pleasure.
Oh, thank you, sir. How's the weather in Bamberg, Germany today?
It's beautiful. In Texas, it's 104, but it's about 79 degrees here, so it's great running weather.
That's excellent. That's the old stomping grounds. My very first post in the United States Army was Bamberg, Germany, once I got out of basic training at AIT, so I know it well.
I'm afraid to ask, what year was that, Tim?
1974. Exceeding myself.
Right in the middle of the Cold War.
Right in the middle of the Cold War, facing the Soviet threat. Anyhow, Sir, I hope you heard my intro. Most of it, I saw your number there on the line. Tell me, sir, isn't this remarkably like, in my mind, the ambush of Sergeant Taylor and the black car showing up and taking fire, remarkably like the initiation of the ambush of Justin Chirot and the Editha Marines back in 2005?
You know, I think the government would like to draw a parallel between the two cases, but notwithstanding a few similarities, that is the IED attack and small arms fire, there's a tremendous difference between this case and Sergeant Wooderich's case, and that is, at the end of the day, Sergeant Wooderich pled guilty, as you know, to, I believe it was negligent homicide, but based on a theory that, hey, he kind of just sent his men off in a single direction and said, hey, shoot first, ask questions later. That is far from the set of facts that we have here. The ambush had just ceased. The black car had acted in a manner that led the platoon to believe they were something other than civilians. They had never seen a car drive into a firefight before that wasn't a part of it. Again, as you said, they approached the black car following the command wire. It seemed to go directly to the car. So these factors started, you know, one after another. There was 9 minutes between the ceasefire and them walking up to the car. So in the intervening 9 minutes, no one gets out of the car. They only step out of the car when these soldiers are in a danger radius of either a suicide vest or a suicide vehicle-borne IED. So there was one factor after another factor after another factor, and you said it right. This platoon sergeant is responsible not only for his own life, and the facts have borne out repeatedly, that was the least of his concerns. His own ass was the least of his concerns. He wasn't the leader back in the vehicle, sitting in the vehicle. He was the guy at the tip of the spear. But these factors were building up in his mind, and he was given seconds, less than four, to make a decision. And throughout the Article 32, we repeatedly ask, how does one know conclusively that one is in the, you know, in the presence of a suicide vehicle-borne IED or a suicide bomber? And the answer was repeatedly, the only conclusive answer is they blow up. So my position is, and will remain, that Sergeant First Class Taylor is a hero of the United States Army. He did the right thing. He should not be prosecuted. He should be getting a medal for what he did.
Yeah, and doesn't it seem that the rules of engagement offer a soldier three choices? You can believe your lying eyes and defend yourself, you know, and these are all civilians, and if you do and you're right, good job. If you're wrong and it turns out to be an innocent civilian, here's your charge sheet, and if you're wrong and you don't shoot, and you're killed, and it turns out to be an enemy.
You get a flag. Well, then your family gets a flag, and they say you did a good job. You're right. He was in a catch-22. So Sergeant Taylor rolls up. These factors start to accumulate in his mind. This is no stranger to combat. He was a non-commissioned. He went to OIF-1. He was in the initial invasion. He was a member of OIF-3, Operation Iraqi Freedom 3, as a sergeant. He was a member of Operation Iraqi Freedom 10. And now Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan 11. This is his fourth combat deployment. This man had made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of decisions that were right, that safeguarded the lives of his men. For that reason, he was promoted before his peers. And he was in this proverbial catch-22. That is, you don't fire, everybody dies. You do fire, and there's a car load full of explosives. They give you a medal and you're a hero, unless, of course, it's Dr. Hekmat, a friend of President Karzai, and then, of course, you get a court-martial. So let there be no mistake about this. At the end of the day, the bottom line, in my mind, is this. Sergeant Taylor is not being prosecuted because he shot. He is being prosecuted for who he shot.
Because of the outcome, not because of the decision he made.
Exactly. Not that he shot, but who he shot. The decision to shoot in itself wasn't a culpable decision. It all depended on what was in the car when we rolled up on it.
Yeah, and you know, and we're talking about what is called PID in the ROE, the Rules of Engagement, personal identification. So, you know, if you're right, you're right, and if you're wrong, well, you know, one of two things happen, and both of them are a bad outcome. You know, so you know, for a second here, I think we have a caller on the line who can speak to Sergeant Taylor's leadership and his actions that day. Let me bring him in here. I believe this may be Sergeant Raymond Olivares. Is it, sir?
Yes, correct, sir.
Thank you, Sergeant. Sergeant, you were with our friend Sergeant Taylor on July 21st, 2011, and also 10 days later. First, do me a favor. Tell me what kind of soldier, what kind of platoon sergeant, what kind of leader Sergeant Taylor was.
He's probably one of the best NCOs I've met, you know. He's always put the soldiers' needs before his own, not just his own soldiers, but, like, all the soldiers around the battalion, different companies. He's always trying helping everybody out, you know. He never slept. He's always doing some paperwork, you know, make sure the soldiers have the training, make sure we have everything we need, just taking care of everybody. That's all his first concern, his soldiers.
And, you know, and that day, let's go to July 21st. Now, you had just served this whole tour with him, I assume. Am I correct? This deployment to Afghanistan, is that right?
Yes.
And so on July 21st, this was the first time your platoon had been hit, had it? Had it been hit a multiple number of times, is that correct?
Yes. I think it was a lot. I'm not sure on the number, but there was a lot of times we were hit before.
Sergeant Olivares, how many times were you hit yourself?
Twice.
And Mr. Sumner, you know that Sergeant Olivares was in the vehicle later on 2nd of August when the RPG penetrated and destroyed Sergeant Taylor's face, right?
Tell us about that, Sergeant Olivares, so to the extent you can. You know, what happened on August 2nd, 2011?
We did a mission in the morning, and then we got a couple hours off, and we went again for another mission. It was already nighttime by the time we went out. We're passing this little village, Salar, and almost towards the end, we stopped, and then we recovered vehicle. And as soon as Sergeant Taylor hopped in the vehicle, we were started rolling the vehicle I was driving that day, and you know we stopped again, and then we started driving. And that's when they shot the round. And it went through his side, the TC,
mm-hmm.
through the window, and then it just went through. Somehow it missed his face, and it just blew off his face. And then it curved and exploded my face.
Mm-hmm. And I understand and you don't have to speak to this, because I know you're probably a humble guy, but the stone injuries, you were instrumental in saving Sergeant Taylor's life. You know, he was pretty badly hurt that day, and you were also hurt in that attack. Is that right?
Yes. Roger, I was right next to him in the driver's seat.
Yep. Sitting right next to him in the driver's seat. And you were also with him on July 21st when this ambush occurred. Mm. Pretty crazy situation. This is not like the movies. This is the real world. Am I right, Sergeant Olivares?
Roger, it's not Call of Duty here. It's real life.
Tell me, just in your own opinion, is it crazy for us to be second-guessing the split-second combat decisions of people like Sergeant Taylor and yourself on the battlefield?
Hey, Mr. Sumner,
yes,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but because Sergeant Olivares is still on active duty, I think that we can all perceive what his answer would be, but I don't want him to step over the line. The facts as he saw them are one thing, but I'd like him to stay away from prosecution himself by delivering any opinions that he has about it.
You're absolutely right. I'm sorry, Sergeant Olivares.
No worries.
Wouldn't want to put you in a bad spot. But, let me tell you, I'm retired United States Army. I haven't been where you have, and done what you've done. But I think I know a little bit about it, and I can only speak for me. It's crazy what they're doing to these folks on the battlefield. Mr. Culp, let's talk a little bit more about the Article 32 last week. What struck you in testimony from this? And please stay with us, Sergeant Olivares. I'm going to bring you back in, but stand by.
Okay, sir.
Talk about the Article 32 a little bit more.
Well, first of all, the first thing that struck me as the days waned on, and we went in from the morning until the night, is I started to feel that I wasn't worthy to sit next to Sergeant First Class Taylor. Truly. And I spent 11 active duty years in the military myself, 4 in the infantry, 7 as a JAG. I have never, ever represented a guy with the type of combat experience and performance that Sergeant Taylor brings to the table. As exceptional as the situation was, and believe me, this is a classic textbook case of there is no right answer. And of course, we've already discussed that. So they should teach this case in the JAG school as they taught another case. Formerly in the JAG school when I was there, they taught this case. You're inside of a FOB, a forward observation base, and you're taking mortar rounds. So you look around 360 degrees from your base, and you see only one thing. You see a man 600 meters out with a pair of binoculars. Now, you know that the guys firing the mortar rounds need a forward observer, but all you see is a man with a pair of binoculars. For all you know, he's, you know, watching birds that morning. Is that a hostile act? Is that hostile intent? And I'll tell you, a group of lawyers couldn't come up with the right answer because there is no right answer. And maybe the right answer is it all depends on whether or not the guy holding the binoculars is related to President Karzai or knows him. But the one thing that struck me in this case is that this is another one of those cases where there is no right answer. So this case was very exceptional to me because I realized soon after taking the case that this was an impossible situation that Sergeant Taylor was put in. But as the 32 progressed, I realized something else. The Army cannot produce a better non-commissioned officer than they have in Sergeant First Class Taylor. And so what dawned on me as this thing proceeded is, oh, my God, if this impossible situation with this incredible NCO goes to court-martial, what is the outcome? What is the potential chilling effect on the soldiers on the battleground? And here's what I've concluded. If this case goes forward to a court-martial, A, the government knows it will lose. They cannot prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Sergeant Taylor is guilty of a crime in this scenario. But B, and more importantly, if it goes forward, I don't think it really matters to the powers that be whether they win or lose, because it's not the conviction of Sergeant Taylor that perhaps they would be looking for, but rather the chilling effect on the soldiers in the background. Because here's what they're going to say. If this impossible situation with this exceptional NCO results in a court-martial, then holy cow, then my situation certainly would, because I'm half the NCO Sergeant Taylor is, and my facts aren't nearly that complicated, so maybe I should wait and hesitate. So in my opinion, this entire situation is an exercise in forced hesitation by intimidation. That is, they're intimidating the future soldiers on the ground who are going to be operating under the ROE to wait and wait and wait, because the average guy on the ground knows his facts are never going to be as difficult as Sergeant Taylor's, and he's never going to be half the NCO that Sergeant Taylor is, so he's certainly going to wind up in a court-martial. And that's the danger of this case. The danger of this case is the new precedent where we're going to hold non-commissioned officers and soldiers on the ground criminally liable for split-second decisions they make in combat on a negligence theory, when we have all the officers in the world flying these drones and calling in bombs and killing civilians by the dozens. Not one of those guys have faced a court-martial, but we're going to do it to the NCO on the ground, who not only does not have the luxury of a lawyer standing next to him going, yeah, that's a good idea to do this and that, because that's what the commanders have, that's what the officers have. These guys don't have the luxury of the lawyers. And number two, they're in harm's way. Their decisions will dictate their own life or death, not some other amorphous civilian that they can only see on a computer screen. So if we're going to hold Sergeant Taylor criminally liable, then our military needs to take a long, hard look at the negligent dropping of bombs and the negligent shooting of missiles from drones. And we need to make sure that the standard that we apply to Sergeant First Class Taylor applies to every damn officer in the United States military.
Well said. We are speaking with James Culp. He is the defense lawyer for Army Sergeant First Class Walter Taylor. And folks, if you want to support Sergeant Taylor in this effort, if you're mad like I'm mad, and you ought to be mad at this prosecution, you ought to go, if you are on Facebook, go to Facebook and look for In Support of SFC Walter Taylor. You can't get there. Come to freedomradiorocks.com. Right there on the page, you can scan down and see how you can support Sergeant First Class Taylor. You can first, if you go to Facebook, you can write a comment. You can talk about this, and you can pass the word. You can, if you can, you can see your way to do it. You can donate to the defense, defending these soldiers. You know, the military is not equipped with the trial defense counsels and not knocking them. These folks do, they do yeoman's work. They try hard, but they are up against it. They're up against the military that has the great ability to bring these cases and lots of conflicts here, I would say. I would add that as a personal note. But I would say, from my experience, I could tell you that the prosecution is weighed against our troops. So we, to level the playing field, we can support trial defense counsels like our friend here, James Culp, who has done yeoman's work in this regard over the course of his career, and we can defend these. We can level the playing field. So again, you can go to Facebook, In Support of SFC Walter Taylor, or come to freedomradiorocks.com, scan down. You can see how you can support him. Mr. Culp, you make a great point. You're talking about these rules of engagement that we're applying to our troops on the battlefield. We are not applying to those folks thousands of miles away that are dropping drones on. When I, by the way, I'm all for dropping drones on the enemy. I'm all for killing the enemy. Don't get me wrong. I'd like to see us capture a few of them. Questions to my But besides that, I'm all for killing the enemy. If we can't reach out and touch them with, and grab them and talk to them, okay, I'm all for killing the enemy. But those are not PID. They're making wild guesses. They're counting the military-age men in the nearby area as collateral damage. Nope, we count them as the enemy. But those decisions are not questioned, and they're not subject to the same rules that we are placing on our troops, like Sergeant First Class Walter.
And they're made with the luxury of having a lawyer sitting right next to them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you've got plenty of time. It's not somebody 1001, 1002, 1003. Do I live or die here? Do my soldiers live or die here? How crazy is this way?
Yeah, it seems that we're in a crazy universe. Hopefully this case won't go forward. Hopefully the fact-finding that was done at the Article 32 will persuade the powers that be that that we're correct and that this case is best suited to be withdrawn. I don't want you to cut me off before I say one thing, and I want to say this to Sergeant Oliveris. Sergeant Oliveris, you're a hero. I know what you did the day that Sergeant Taylor's face was blown off with an RPG, and I know that you were severely injured, and I know that all the people around you said that they couldn't hear each other because you were screaming, "We got to take care of Sergeant Taylor. We got to take care of Sergeant Taylor." You were severely injured. Sergeant Oliveris is in a WTU, a Warrior Transition Unit. His injuries are so severe he's not going to be able to continue his military service. And I just want people to know that Sergeant Oliveris, A, is a hero, and I would serve with you any day, and B, there are a lot more Sergeant Oliverises out there, not only in RCP 38, which was Sergeant Taylor's platoon, but in this engineer unit and in 54th Engineer Battalion. It has been a privilege and an honor to be out here in Bamberg and to meet these young men who do a job that is more deadly, more dangerous than anybody else's job in this conflict, and that's this route clearance, these IED finders. These guys are exceptional, and they have not, as a class of human beings, received the credit that they deserve because they have borne the brunt of the danger that is posed by our presence in Afghanistan. Sergeant Oliveris, you should be proud of your service. I am proud of you. I'm proud to know you, and I'm proud to serve and to represent your platoon, Sergeant.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, Sergeant Oliveris, I'm going to add that. Thank you for your service. I can speak to this just from the heart. So much appreciate what all of our troops have done. Our nation was attacked on 9/11. Our nation was attacked on 9/11. And we went to war in Afghanistan. I personally lost a fellow soldier, a friend in the Pentagon that day, and my wife's brother, a 9/11 firefighter, was killed. I could speak for the 9/11 family and tell you that we support you We love you, and we appreciate all you have done for our country.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, Mr. Culp.
Yes, sir.
What else can we do to support Sergeant Taylor? I know I've given the website, and I mentioned that. What are the kind of things that you think, not just the Sergeant Taylor, but the Sergeant Taylors of the world, that are being pushed around in these malicious prosecutions? And in my opinion, my words, this is an appeasement of the Karzai government while the president finds a exit from the right war, quote-unquote, the right war in Afghanistan.
I don't have the names of the people responsible for the decision to prosecute Sergeant Taylor, and I certainly wasn't part of the discussions that led up to him being formally charged. I will tell you that the Article 32 investigation process is not, it's similar to a preliminary hearing, it's similar to a grand jury hearing, but it is exceptional in this way. No other pretrial investigation, and let there be no mistake, the Article 32 is a pretrial investigation where the Article 32 investigating officer is tasked to find whether there are reasonable grounds, and that is synonymous with probable cause, to move forward with the prosecution. In the civilian preliminary hearings and grand jury hearings, there is no right on the behalf of the accused or the defendant to present more evidence and try to present evidence in a defense or an extenuation or mitigation to show that there is not probable cause. This is a government-driven function in the civilian world, and in the Article 32 process, it is very much a fact-finding and investigative hearing. So I will be the first to concede that all the facts that were now discovered at the Article 32 were not at the commander's fingertips who decided to go forward with a prosecution. Unfortunately, we don't have a better system and process. I believe there could be one, but right now we don't have a better system and process. First the soldier gets charged with a crime, and then we go to the Article 32. So I don't want to demonize the government. You know what? I love the United States of America. This prosecutor, or these two prosecutors in this case, that's their job. Somebody gave them this job. They're doing the best job they can, doing what they're told to do. I'm not going to demonize any one person. I do believe that there are some prosecutions, and this may be one of them, that are less informed at the outset than they are later. I do hope that the Article 32 investigative process here has revealed enough information about this case that the persons responsible for the next decision, and that is whether to move forward with the court-martial or not, have enough facts at their fingertips to make the right decision. I believe the right decision is for the charges against Sergeant First Class Taylor to be withdrawn. But I will tell you that no person joins the military, from my perspective, with an intent to do the wrong thing. There are prosecutions that are more fundamentally sound from the outset than others. I think that this is not a fundamentally sound prosecution, that there's no way that Sergeant Taylor could be convicted beyond a reasonable doubt for these offenses, given the nature of the circumstances and who he is. That said, I hope for the best here. I hope that the right decision is made, that the prosecution withdraws, the commander withdraws these charges. But I'm not going to demonize the prosecution. I know that they're interested and concerned about good order and discipline. I do believe that some level, at a level that I'm not crystal clear about, that politics played a decision here. I said that in the beginning, that this is a product of who he shot, not that he shot. But hopefully reasonable minds will prevail, and we'll be finished with this soon.
Yep, and you know, and again, I don't want to demonize the military either. I proudly serve my country. I'm proud of our troops now. I believe, you know, my mindset is very simple. I'm for America. I am for defending this nation. I am for taking the fight to the enemy, and I am for the enemy doing all the dying, okay? And looking at these types of cases and looking at these types of second-guessing, that is what concerns me. It's not that we fight and defend ourselves. We need to. But we fight in a counterinsurgency war where it is certainly not clear, very often not clear, who is friend and foe. We need to allow our troops to make decisions on the ground necessary in the combat situation. We're not talking about indiscipline and total spraying of troops. We're talking
exactly
about the split-second combat decision, often called the fog of war, but when your life is on the line and they make the call based upon reasonable assumptions that they get to see, right, we need to trust them. We don't need to prosecute them. And, yeah, we can look and learn afterwards and learn from what the enemy is doing and the kind of tactics they're using and use those as what we used to call after-action reviews, right, to learn and better do it better next time, hopefully, but not to put the safety on their weapons to prevent them from doing what they got to do. You know, it's shoot, don't shoot. This is not the same as this is a very bad, bloody battlefield. It has gotten terribly worse the last 3 years with IED. 50% of all the 1,400 of our troops that have been killed in the last 3.5 years have been killed by IEDs. We cannot second-guess these kind of decisions, and that's where I'm coming from.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, sir, I really appreciate you joining us. Again, it is on Facebook, in support of SFC Walter Taylor, or come to freedomradiorocks.com. We have been speaking to James Culp. Sir, thank you for joining us here. Sergeant Oliveira, thank you for joining us here this morning on Freedom Radio to talk about this. We will stay up with this case.
Thanks, Mr. Sumner.
Hey, thank you, sir. Keep up the great work, and we'll be speaking to you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think you heard a compelling reason to support Sergeant First Class Walter Taylor. And I think you've heard about another case where we need to look at the second-guessing of our troops and what we've been doing to them over these last number of years, this criminalization, if that's my terminology, criminalization of our warriors. It's the wrong tactics.